Welcome back, everybody. It's More Than a Game, the podcast where we talk about how basketball shapes you, grows you, and ultimately becomes a tool for life, and not just a sport you play. And today's a really cool day because we have someone here who really just embodies what we talk about here on the podcast. He's a former pro. He's a dedicated coach, a mentor, a community builder, and you know, he spent some time behind the scenes on Netflix. So I really would like to welcome TJ Stukes. How you doing, man? I really appreciate you joining us today.
No, thank you for having me. And I'm all good. I'm great, actually.
Awesome, awesome. And for anyone who's watching today, we're just going to really talk about real conversations. We're going to get away from the theories today, but we want to talk about leadership, community, purpose, and really just doing the game the right way. And so without further ado, TJ, really want to start from the beginning. Give us an idea of who you are, where you're from, and when did basketball first become real for you?
Well, my name is TJ Stukes. I'm from the Bronx, New York.
Yep.
Basketball became real for me at 16 because I always played for fun, but I never wanted to play for real until I got tall. So between the summer of 15 and 16, the August of me about to turn 16, I grew 9 inches. And that whole summer, I worked. I didn't play any sports. So I stopped playing baseball. I stopped playing football because I was like, I'm 5'9". What am I going to do? Let me get some money. So I worked. And then from, I say, July to very early September, I found my feet hanging off the bed. So,
man,
like,
I wish I had that problem.
So my mom is 6 foot. So that was when I hugged my mom and she was in my chest. That was the definitive. I was like, oh, I'm taller than my mom, but I'm way taller than my mom. After that, I got approached by a guy named Earl Lewis. He's in the basketball world. He's not like a top person, but he knows a lot of people. And he introduced me to a coach named Kevin Hamilton. He went to Iona legend. He played for the Celtics with Larry Bird. And I didn't know anything about basketball. I was just really athletic and really strong. I'd say that year leading up to the next summer when I was turning 17, that's when it became real. Very, very real, because I was exposed to people, like names I never heard of, things I never seen before, places I never been. Just the prospect of going to college for free was a reality now. And then playing street ball in New York, you know, a lot of people know, but most people in this generation don't know how big the early 2000s street ball was. Huge. And I was exposed to a lot of veteran pros in the first year of me playing.
So you just jumped right into it.
Yeah, I was getting cooked every single time. But the first time I was like, nah, this ain't happening. You know, I ain't getting cooked like that. Was a guy named Corey Williams, a.k.a. Homicide. But the reason why they call him Homicide, because he'll kill you with numbers. And NBL legend, Toronto Raptors, you know, and that was the first game. I gave him 43, and he gave me 57. And he was like, you're the first person to not back down for me. You didn't back down. You kept going at me. He said, I'm impressed. I'm going to follow you. And, you know, I want you to come under my wing, you know, like, let me teach you a few things, youngin. So now I'm hanging around big names like, you know, the franchise, you know, Rod Strickland, you know, Kenny Spatterfield, you know, like.
And how old are you during this time?
I'm going on 18.
18? Dang. Okay. I mean, that's cool because, like, myself, right? Like, I started playing at a young age, you know, so I knew the game, you know, since I was, you know, damn near out my mama's womb, right? But you got introduced to the heat of things and then in New York at that. So, like, how was just, like, mentally, like, how was that experience? And then what would you say for, you know, some of these kids today who are not, like, as skilled, right? Like, maybe they're middle school, early high school, they're not as skilled, their confidence isn't there yet. So, like, what is your perspective on that as well?
Definitely with me not being nowhere near as skilled as some of the people I was playing, be willing to shut up and listen. Because these kids now, they think they know it all because they have a phone now. They can Google stuff. They can look up stuff. Mm-hmm. There's no experience like going through it yourself. and just put your head down. Put your head down and work, because everybody says, oh, I'm in the gym, I'm in the lab, I'm in the gym. But okay, that's cool, you're in the gym, but are you in the weight room? Are you watching film? Are you running 3 miles a day? You know, like it takes like practice. Practice is for the team. When you train, it's for individual skill. But now, oh, that's cool, you could do that, but can you do the little stuff? Can you do the little stuff that'll put you over that hump?
And that's a great point because I always talk about in my content on TikTok or whatever that like skill is gonna come. You know, you're gonna put in the work, skill is gonna come, but like what are your other value points? Like what else can you provide to impact whatever it is? And a big topic that I'm kind of going through right now is like you don't need to be the number one scorer, right? Even if you are, there are gonna be days when you can't hit the side of a barn. So like being able to just, you know, grow in pretty much every area of the game is going to be beneficial, in my opinion, especially to the younger kids, right? Because, I mean, like you mentioned, right? Social media, we just see people shooting the ball. And so everybody just wants to shoot, shoot, shoot. Everybody wants to score. But we forget that, you know, like people get recruited for being a defensive specialist, for making plays, or just for being smart on the court. So I think that's a great point. So we talked about, you know, street ball, how you just got, you know, you jumped right into that. So what were the next steps in your career and just like what made you decide that you wanted to continue, you know, this journey?
Okay, so my high school, we were dominating, and we had a lot of big names. But this one guy, his name is Jermaine Maybank. He went to Independence Community College, and I had no idea what college was about, D1, whatever. I didn't know. All I knew, it was free. That's it. And it's not in New York. That's it. So, you know, he was like, go the JUCO route because it'll make you tougher. And I'm like, what is JUCO? And he thought I was playing. I was like, no, what does JUCO mean? Is it like a term? Like, what does it mean? He said, junior college. Oh, I heard of that. And you know, like I'm looking at TV, like I'm looking at the Big East, you know, St. John's, you know, Pitt, you know, that's what I know, you know, NBA. And so when I hear JUCO, I'm like, is that where people like fail or something? I had no idea. And so, you know, my coach, Wade Williams, he was all about, no, TJ, it's not. You're going to school for free and you're playing basketball. That summer, from winning the state championship to graduating, I mean, I'm old school. So, you know, I got the shoe boxes of like offer letters, and the kids don't know about that now because they got Twitter and Insta, you know, like I got shoe boxes worth of letters from all the way from Clemson to UC Riverside, you know, and my mom was like, what are those letters? I'm gonna throw them away. I said, don't you dare throw them away. But I didn't understand the gravity of what I was in, because I was exposed to it so late in my teens. And then what really made me realize, yo, this basketball thing is big, when I got chosen in 2005 to play in the Nike Battlegrounds, a TV show. Like LeBron James hosted it. Chicago was coached by Andre Iguodala. New York was coached by Ben Gordon. We had one of the best trainers in Jerry from Long Island. I'm sorry, Queens. And then on the Chicago side, they had Pat Beverly playing. That's when he was averaging 37 in high school. And that really exposed me to how big, like, yo, all I was doing was just playing hard. And I guess I stood out. And so out of 2,900 people, the only 20 was chosen between both teams. And so you know, playing in that, I was like, yo, okay, I gotta go somewhere for college now. Like, I have to go somewhere. And then I'd say Independence Community College, the JUCO, really pursued me like really hard. Like, hey, you can help us out. And then after your 2 years, after you've grown, you can go wherever you want. We know you can go wherever you want. So you know, I went there.
I don't mean to interrupt you. So why the decision to go, like knowing that you had looks from some, you know, mid to high level Division One, you know, programs, like why would you decide to go to a JUCO?
Truthfully, like 100, I could say this now because I am done with basketball, because they weren't paying like that. I was getting paid in street ball like 8 to 10,000 a week playing street ball. And so, for the 3 months, I was getting like my senior year when I was graduating, going to college, I'd say that year I made like $80,000 just street ball.
As
And
a late high school kid too.
but the thing is, my like I always, you can ask anybody, I always outwork the next person. I was never better, ever. But skill, I was never there. But I always outworked, which always stood out to people. Like I was loud, I was talkative, I would dive on concrete. Why would I do that? When I heard the stories from like Siku Kaba, who went to Providence, like he got a lot of credibility for carrying the team. But they got the stipend where, and they couldn't get a job, and they had to lie about, get taking food from people who wanted to offer it. And I'm like, so when you're hungry, you can't ask for food as a college student? I'm like, nah, I'm good, man. So JUCO was a lot more lenient with that. And but my dumb self, I ran through that money, because when people eat in the cafeteria, I'm going to Walmart, spending $300, $400. A week per trip.
Yeah, you're young. I mean, that's you. You're not the only one that has done that, right? Like, and I mean that brings up like the importance of like having a good network, having a good cast of people around you to support you, to help you make these decisions. Because I've seen it just through my career in basketball. Where kids literally have the golden road in front of them, like everything is there for them, but they just don't have people helping them make sound decisions, right? And that's an unfortunate thing that even five-star recruits, four-star recruits go through. It's like either they're poor with money, they decide to go to a school that doesn't really fit them, and they just kind of get lost in the game. So that's awesome. I think that's a thing. Just in retrospect, when you think about things like that, it really puts things into perspective, especially when you're a coach. When you're a trainer or just a mentor in the game, right? Because you can use that as just tools and just nuggets to help build that next generation of hoopers. So so you went to community college, spent some time there. What was after that?
So let me explain what catapulted me from a JUCO prospect to a D1 prospect from JUCO. My first year, we did all right. We did like 16 and 16, right? Now my sophomore year, I am the leader of the team. We got a new coach. That man is an authoritarian. He is like a military guy. He does things like ABC. If you don't do them by ABC, you OUT. And so that's the first time I has that's a well second time I had somebody completely just shut me up and humble the hell out of me, right? So our team, we lost our first three games, right? Winnable games too, winnable games. And then we didn't lose from late October to March. Like literally, we started unranked, we ended number eight in the nation, and we beat every team in front of us. We won 31 in a row. That's when St. John's came in the picture. St. John's is recruiting me. I'm like, yo, like they flying out, like full, remember the velour suits? Oh my God. The gray and red velour suits. My man Steve Lavin was out there. He was like, yeah, TJ, we want you, man. You a New Yorker, you'd be home, and you'd be playing high level basketball. So I was like, yo, yeah, man, like, man, this is the best thing ever. But I met a girl, right? I met a girl, and she killing too. So she signs with Hawaii Pacific, right? The team that just beat Boise State. And she signs with them. And I'm like, yo, will I ever meet a chick like her again? Like ever? Like, I don't know, yo. I tell Coach Lavin about her. And he's like, she sound like a keeper, man. I'm like, yeah. And I don't ever do this, like, ever. I made the decision to stay in Kansas and go to Pitt State. Everyone in my family was so mad at me. So mad at me. You choose going D2 over a D1 for that chick, for the chick? And I heard it from my whole family. Kids, don't ever do that. It never works out. 0.02% works out. I am 0.02% that worked out. Don't ever do it, kids. I didn't have stability in my household. Even though she was an army brat, she had stability because she was always with family. No matter where they was at in the world, she was always with family. And so she, as much as I became her balance, she definitely became my balance. And then like I said, I went to Pitt, where I did tremendously average. Then our team, we had a great team, but we had potential, but not cohesiveness. And so yeah, I foregoed my senior year because I'm like, again, I see my jerseys. I like, you know, like I'm loud, brash, I'm in people's faces, I'm in the crowd, you know, people love me for that. And I see my jersey being sold out every time they get a new shipment, but I'm getting $300 a month. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm hungry, but my jerseys are sold out.
Somebody's making money.
Somebody's making money. So now with that, I have always been with the movement of pay the players. Always. Always. Because every summer I'm making this much, but now I have to spend it. I have to spread it out through 10 months because I'm only getting $300 a month as a stipend. And I'm like, this ain't added up, yo.
Yep. No, I feel that. I think. You know, it's crazy how times work, right? Because like now these kids are getting paid. Like these
Paid.
kids are getting paid. Like life-changing money. It's insane. Like our UT, University of Texas football team, like some of them are pulling up in Lambos, Maseratis, and stuff like that. But like these kids, it's stupid how much money is in the game today. And I just, you know, talked about it in a recent podcast. Like the sport of basketball is a like hundreds, like multi-hundred billion dollar industry, right? But a lot of that is driven by players. I would love to get your perspective on this. And I talked to you about what I do with Elite Fit Connect. But we're also thinking about, you know, getting into that NIL space, but to bring, you know, ethics and the integrity so that, you know, kids can make strategic decisions and, you know, whatever brand that they choose to represent, or, you know, they decide to partner with the NIL agency, right? Because as you said, right, like kids do need to get paid, but they also need to be educated and equipped with the right resources to make the right decisions, right? So like my vision is, you know, like we can use EFC, the community, and just like the amount of data that we collect on athletes and use that to create some kind of scorecard for these players. That way, schools or NIL agencies can like have this data-backed essentially report card of these athletes. So that way they can like just better match them with, you know, a brand or whatever it may be, right? So with all of that, like how important is, you know, just kids like learning and being as well equipped to everything that goes on with NIL, like how important is that today?
NIL, I feel that that should be as a if you're an athlete in high school, that should be taught to you. I believe that heavily because so many people, you know who's gonna make it out, right? You know who's gonna make it to college because you can see it. There's some people that, you know, like squeeze through the cracks and they're not that good, but they still go to college. But there's a lot of people that you see it like, oh, he's going, I don't know where he's going, but he's going to college to play basketball and, you know, to be a student. But that should be taught in high school first because going through experience, I had to learn it the hard way. You don't hear the stories about when people steal money from them or, you know, funnel a check through them and it gets less and less and less each time it's funneled, you know? And so I believe that the NIL should, to be eligible for NCAA D1, 2, or 3, I think you should have an NIL class as mandatory. I think so. That's mandatory because you can get paid, but these kids have false hopes. There's people that's getting paid $10,000, there's people that's getting paid $800,000. There's a big difference. You know, you can be sellable, but if you ain't good, you ain't sellable.
Yep. That's, I mean, like, that's like to your point, right? Like, you have kids who can play the mess out of ball, but like, they have no social media presence or they just do the wrong things, you know, in social media. So, like, and you know, like, these agencies, they look at the full spectrum, right? They want to see how well you can play. They want to see if you have character, if you're still working on your game. But they also see, like, how do you engage with or interact with, you know, fans and, you know, people who are on social media, right? There's this kid, I don't know if you're familiar, Eli Ellis. So he played with Overtime Elite. OTE League,
OTE,
right?
yep.
And he's a small white boy guard, probably like maybe 6 foot. But obviously, like in today's game, like a 6 foot guard, like it's gonna be very difficult for you to get to the next level. It's not impossible, right? But that's just another thing you got to get through. But his marketability is crazy, right? Like he's pretty much a content creator, and OTE capitalized on him to, kind of market OTE, get more eyes on the program. And with that, he was also balling. Like, he won a championship while at OTE, and then ultimately he got, some Division I looks, and now he's at South Carolina, right? So I think kids, or I would say adults, like leaders like us, we underestimate, the marketability aspect of the game, right? And I think it's up to us to educate, and we need to own, like, just the development of these kids from, end to end, right? And old crusty people, they just be like, social media, stay off social media. I remember I got in trouble in college for like doing like a sports vlog, right? And our coach shut that down real quick. And then a few years later, what do you know? NIL, right? And people are getting paid off these kids because of their stories and what they do. So it's interesting just seeing the landscape change and shift, but I think it's for the better. I will also say that we do need to play a bigger part as leaders, right? Collectively, to make sure these kids are just navigating the right way, because it's a lot, right? There's a lot of money, there's regulations, policies, we just, and then, there's people out there who want to take advantage of these kids. So you denied St. John's, you went D2 because you fell in love, which obviously that's the best decision you made, right? Because you're still
Best
married and you
decision,
have
yes.
beautiful kids, right? So after that, like, what was basketball looking like after your college experience?
Okay. That's a road. So again, I'm thrown into something that I have no idea about, right? So I'm learning on the fly. So I do a camp in Fordham University, and I average 15, 15, and 5, right? And I'm not killing, but I am a standout. So this guy, he says, "Hey, I can get you signed today." And I'm like, "Look, man, I ain't with that. Like, I don't like you're selling me like a con man, not like an agent." I told him straight up, and like one thing of people will always say about me, TJ is crazy, but he will always tell the truth right to your face.
Keep it real, yeah.
He was like, "Oh, my bad." Well, he said, "I can help you get signed." And then we started talking like week by week. It was like 3 weeks and he got me signed to a team in Poland, in Oslo. And I went there and I did okay, just okay. I averaged like 11, 13, 3 blocks, 4 assists, And another team wanted to sign me in Oslo, a higher division. And that's when the bombing happened in Oslo. So they shut down everything for like a year, right? So there was no jobs and nothing. So that's when I went to the Harlem Wizards. My son was being born and I wanted to be in the States. And that so it was like, oh, it works out, perfectly. And so all I saw was me making money, playing basketball, and traveling. I didn't see the level or the show basketball aspect of it, right? So I was playing with them for like 2 years. It's making really good money. So I went to China, right? First time. And I played in the D2 CBA and I murdered. I killed. I mean, I went off. That was the first time in my life that I realized as an athlete, I'm better than a lot of people.
Yeah. And I know you said D2 CBA, but CBA in general, it's a very competitive league,
Very.
right? So I just don't want to downgrade, the level of competition you were at.
Yeah. So what happened was, they signed me up to the CBA and I did good, very good for a person who hasn't been exposed to being like in a big stage, 50,000 people in the audience. I'd average for that, I say 4 months, I averaged 18, 9, 3 blocks. And they loved me because again, I was intense in people's faces. I ain't gonna lie, I was wild, a little wild, right? Then I came back to the States, and that's when everything, like my name started getting out there because I'm starting to play in the streetball leagues, and people are like, "Why are you playing in the streetball leagues? You're killing them. Why are you playing?" And then,
League.
and then you never know who's watching, the way you carry yourself. And then this trainer, the trainer Jerry, he was like, "Yo, TJ, why are you wasting time, man?" He said, "Let me train you." So I trained with him for like a month, and he got me a look. And he got me a tryout that led to a tryout that led to another tryout that led to the draft combine. And so the draft combine, he's like, "TJ, I got you. Don't worry about it. I got you. You're my product. I got you." So I'm a no-name person going against Tyler Hansbrough, like all these big names. And crazy that year in 2011, I am like the top 10 in every category. I'm like nine,
The
eight,
combine.
10, eight, nine, 10. And so, they're like, who's this guy? Who's TJ Stuckey's Stucks? And I'm like Stooks, and all the way in the back, Stooks. And then it was like, oh yeah, we like this guy. And then, the scrimmage is happening, and I am like, I was like Quincy Acey almost, just
Okay.
sending stuff,
There you
dunking on
go.
people. But my scoring went down dramatically for defense. And so, I keep going, I keep going. And then draft night happens. I don't get drafted, right? Duh, I'm a no name. And so literally maybe 20 minutes after the draft was completely over, I get a call from Danny Ainge. And I'm like the Danny Ainge? Like what?
Hold up.
And then he was like, "Yeah, we want you to try out and try to do your thing. We liked you. We liked how your energy just was just raw. That's what we need." I was like, "Okay." And then literally from New York, I drove that night after the draft, got to Boston, right? And then that morning, literally, it was like maybe 4 hour drive and then 3 hours sleep and straight to the gym. And I killed in the scrimmages. I killed, but I was, again, remember what I said? I was loud, brash in people's faces, and some people didn't like that. And so, I'm killing, and literally 8 seconds left in the last scrimmage, I would go to dunk, and a dude pulls my jersey back, and I tear my patella, tear my ACL, tear my MCL, and fracture my kneecap. And that's the first time I didn't feel invincible.
How do you even just manage your emotions going through something like that, knowing where you could get to?
I'm not gonna lie, I was in probably the deepest depression of my life. Like then, because I was like, I'm almost there. I could change my family's life. I could change, me and my wife, we could just have kids, like whenever we want. That's what I'm thinking of, right? We could be good. We could do whatever we want, whenever we want. And, just to have it snatched away. Back then, I blamed that person so hard, right? But then I'd say as recent as 3 years ago, I was like, if I was humble enough, if I was humble just played instead of pointing in his face when I dunked on him, or laughing at him when he shot a shot and I sent it to the owner's box, or just like, hey, be a good teammate instead of, come on, like pick it up. What are you doing? Why are you playing stupid for? Come on, man. If I were humble enough, the universe would have deemed me, eligible for that, but I wasn't humble then, and I had the universe humbled me.
That's real. And I mean, I went through injuries, but like that happens often, right? These players, they go through the injuries, they go through the ups and downs, but sometimes we just don't know how to deal with it. But for you, man, I think perfect segue, right? Like one door shuts, right? I think clearly, just with the injury like that, it's really hard to bounce back, and it tests your character, right? I mean, you mentioned you were loud and brash, right? But it changes you a little bit. And so, as I alluded to in the beginning of the show, right? You spent some time out on Netflix, so I definitely would like to talk about how do you transition from almost getting to the league, being a prospect to go play professional basketball, and every kid dreams about that, right? But to going to a show, a reality TV show on Netflix, what are the similarities? Like, what And I know they're different things, but like, you know, what did you carry from, you know, your experience in basketball to that show, and then vice versa? Like, what have you taken from that show into your personal life, into your day to day with kids and bringing them up in the game?
Okay, so I was in multiple reality shows. Number one, Nike Battlegrounds. And then I was in a show with Dwyane Wade called The Cube. And that was one, like, I could honestly say because of basketball, that really got me there because Dwyane Wade, you know, like, he's a Hall of Famer, deservingly
Legend.
so. But with I'd say with the most recent one, with Squid Game, The Challenge, the one thing that stood out with me besides, like, basketball is communication, which is I always say this to kids: communication is the music of basketball. I'm like, how many of y'all like music? And everybody raised their hands that I talked to, and I'd be like, okay, so if you want to be good at basketball, you have to communicate because it's the music of basketball. You're a composer, literally controlling a song if you communicate. And so with the Squid Game, The Challenge, it really opened my eyes up to how many people are different and how many different approaches I can take. And with different people, just learning different cultures, learning different ways to talk to people, learning different ways to be around people. You know, not code switching, but more like adjusting myself. Because I'm a New Yorker, we adapt, we adjust. And so that's one thing, like, New Yorkers are chameleons. And you could put us anywhere
I
we
was just
fit
about to say that. That's funny.
in. You could put us anywhere we fit in, right? It doesn't matter where, but we always New York, no matter where we go or what we do. You know, like that, it taught, like, my leadership. I tried to transfer my basketball leadership to, from being a good teammate, communication, and being a leader. You know, not minding putting myself on the line, not minding being first, because my big thing, and everyone who was there with me on the show, my favorite quote was either humility and gratitude or attack the moment. I'm like, and
And I
me and
hear that all the time in basketball too, so it's crazy. So makes perfect sense.
my wife, me and her are like total opposites. I mean, like, A and Z. She's the planner, right? She got to have a plan. Like, me, I'm like, eh, like, you can't plan for something like that. So just do it.
And just for context, right? People, you know, tuning in. So like I recognize TJ on the first season of Squid Games, and by easily one of my favorite characters, simply because he was a hooper, right? He had a, you know, history with basketball. So for me, being where I'm at, like that was an easy person. But just the way like TJ, like you carried yourself, right? Your leadership. And I know we talked about this previously, but like on the show, from what we saw, you were like the mentor. You were the coach. Like you were the one that like, you know, kind of, you know, kept the peace per se, right? But I know outside of that, right, there's a lot that goes on into just the production of the show. Anything you want to share on that?
Well, I was casted because I thought it was fake. And I, like, I'm Squid Game, what? So, like, who, like, why? And so I did the, you know, tape and all that, and they were like, were you really a professional basketball player? And I'm saying, yes, I really was. Like, you can search my name, you'll see where I played, you see what I've done. They saw it and they was like, can you show us some tricks? Like, I was like, wow. But, you know, I'll do some tricks for y'all. So I did, like, you know, like, go on, boy. But, you know, I said, basketball is a conduit, is a tool. The person I am and the basketball player that I was, they're not the same person. I need y'all to understand that. And it was like, what do you mean? And I said, the person I am has lost so much that I've become a protector, right? But the basketball player I am, I'll put my foot in your neck until you can't get up.
Feel that. Preach.
And so like they were like, that's interesting. Like you're like complete opposite but the same person. I was like, yeah. And it was like, we want you because we want some fucking drama. Mind my language.
I mean, like with me, right? Like I'm super introverted. I'm a nerd. Like, I'd rather be in the house, but on that court, I'm a different person just because like it's like as you talked about, and you specifically, you know, being from the Bronx, it's like if you want to make it in the game, you absolutely have to be a dog. Like you have to not give a what about anything except producing and making a name for yourself, especially if you want to get to that next level. So I think that's a great experience. So Netflix, obviously, and just for people that didn't watch it, how far did you make it on the show?
I made it to the top 20 out of 456 people.
Yep. And then what was the prize?
4.5 million dollars.
Whew.
And it's so crazy. Like when I speak about it, especially now being that the second season's out, like I reflect on it. I think that I wasn't meant to win it. I wasn't meant to win it, but I was meant to help somebody. And obviously, I helped the winner win. And it's so crazy. I will forever speak so highly of her. Mai Whalen, she donated over $1 million to small businesses around the nation. And personally, $20,000 for me. And, that was the first time our kids, our players, didn't have to fundraise. They didn't have to worry about being out in the streets selling waters in the middle of the street, basically. They didn't have to sell apples. They didn't have to, go the extra mile to get a dollar. They didn't have to worry about what they was eating on the road because we took care of it. And for a lot of those kids, majority of those kids, that's the first time they ever had that. Where, oh, we don't, we really don't have to pay.
It's a
We don't have to
blessing.
eat. We don't have to eat McDonald's for a pregame meal. Like, no, like let's go to a restaurant. It's 3 hours ahead. Let's go to a restaurant, get a good meal. And like that exposed them to the life that a pro athlete is. Basically what I did, I said we eat three hours ahead, rest for about 45 minutes, and then we go to the game. Stay off your feet. And my wife, she's a much 100 times better coach than I am, right? And
You listening? Make sure she's listening.
and so, she's the type of person to teach them the X and O's, the logistics of the game, what you need to do to be successful, right? I'm all about, the heart of the game. That's where our balance is so cohesive. That's how we work together so well.
That's awesome. And I think that's why, I relate to you so much because, I mean, the name of this podcast, it's more than a game, right? And it's crazy, everything works, right? You went to a show that had nothing to do with basketball, that had nothing to do with sports, while it was competitive, but like completely outside of what your original plan was. And then you mentioned, that you weren't meant to win the game. And as you were telling that, story, right? Like you gave the opportunity for your kids to really learn about the ins and out of the sport because y'all were blessed with, that 20K that came from my and for me, like that would give me so much confidence as a kid, right? Seeing like, oh, this is what it could be. As we, the segue into that part of your life, just being a mentor, being a coach, like how do you set that foundation of, whatever it is you're trying to set, right? Coaches have their different methodologies or different concepts, but like, how do you properly influence these kids to one, be the best hooper that they can be, but also to just be a good person?
Okay, so as a hooper, I truthfully and honestly, I bust their ass. And so,
You should, yeah.
because I teach them the level where they're at and the level where they should be at. And like I said, the best experience is only going through it. So when I'm playing, for example, about a month ago, right? So I'm playing, three on three cutthroat, right? So it's me, my wife, and my other coach. And so we're losing by five, right? And I'm like, yo, just give me the ball and move out the way, right? So I bounce the ball and I put my shoulder in one of the best player, his chest. And he was like, oh, if I was 6'8", I'd do that too. I said, so what? You're gonna move out the way because I'm 6'8"? I thought I'm just a hooper just like you. And so Like in him, we got into it because I'm trying to teach him through experience, like there's gonna be people just like me that's gonna try to destroy you, and you're just gonna move out their way and let them succeed. And so he under now, like a month and a half later, he understands that because now he's playing people just like him that's actually good. And he's like, Uncle TJ, thank you for that.
Still hate you, but I appreciate the moment.
Yeah. And so, but being a good person, when we're traveling, like for tournaments or when we play local, we're always a team. Like, kids now, they talk so much and we don't talk. I point right in their face. We don't talk. We let the game talk. You shut up and play. Shut up and play. And we teach them how to be professional as we can without having them lose their child, their childhood. So as a good person, we always tell them, open the door for other people. Yes, ma'am. No, sir. May I have something instead of can I? Like just is those little tiny things that people will forget your name. They'll forget what you look like, but they'll always say, he was so respectful. He has his manners are so good. They always remember that. And so being a good person, they'll remember that over you scoring 30 points 2 years ago in this one tournament. And that's what we're teaching our kids.
I mean, are you familiar with John Wooden's tri or a pyramid?
No.
So it's this pyramid of success, right? And the reason why I love it is because it's not specific to just basketball, right? It touches on like all the really intangibles that, you were just talking about, right? Like just being a person of character, respectful, saying the right things, things like that. But at the very bottom of the pyramid, typically, I think young kids would just kind of look over, but it just talks about like friendship, loyalty, cooperation, things like that. And then, you go up a level, you talk about self-control, alertness, taking initiative, up a level, you get into conditioning, your skill, team spirit, and you go up, it's poise, confidence, and at the very top is competitive greatness. So like what all that tells me is if you take care of all the little stuff, take care of your character, you work on your discipline, your work ethic, building your team, being vocal, being a leader, that's all going to lead up to being a competitor, right? You look at the best players in the game, right? Everybody wanted to play with them because they had something about them that not only attracted people, but just made it fun to play with, right? Like everybody in the league wants to play with LeBron James just because he embodies like just the total aspect of what a person should be. And then, when you add that skill, that just brings on just another layer to who you are as a person, right? So I think any kid that I talk to, like I always take pieces from, John Wooden's Pyramid of Success just because like unknowingly that's kind of how I grew up in the game, right? Because I had everything against me, my height, certain teams didn't want me, so I really had to prove myself, but I couldn't just do it with skill, right? I had to bring in everything else, and I think that's what made me become a as good of a leader as I was. So I think everything you said kind of aligns with this pyramid, which is important, especially for the kids. Next question though, like looking at yourself, like how do you keep yourself or hold yourself accountable, especially when you're dealing with kids who have dreams or maybe they just love the game, but like, how do you keep yourself accountable as a coach?
There's times where I am so intense, or I get flashbacks to how I was, or I see like myself in some kids, like when I was 18, 19, 20, like the young, loud, brash, but cooking everybody. The one thing that I've learned, really learned, is patience with other people, because I can't, I it's not fair to expect me out of them. And so when I find myself doing that, I was this, I was that, I was this. Hold on. Yeah, you're not me though. Let me pull myself back. Pull myself back. I'm sorry. What are you going through? Now I listen. Like you could be a fearless leader, but you have to be a fearless listener too. At the same damn time, like you gotta listen as much as talk. When you listen to people, and when people feel heard, that's when the trusts go like this. I just feel that holding myself accountable to understanding that people have different journeys, people have different paths, and people have different temperaments to the game. And so, like me, I feel disrespected when somebody don't step on the court with their shoes laced, with the them ready to play, or practice. I feel that's disrespect to something that saved my life. And but I have to realize this is a new generation. I can't. But I'd be like, hey, tie your shoes before you get on the court. Instead of me yelling, tie your fucking shoes and get on the court. Like that's the way I hold myself accountable. Pull myself back. I pull my own collar, basically.
Perspective. I mean, it's a totally different game. It's completely changed, right? I got one more question. But before I ask that, where can people find you, like, to support whatever it is that you're doing or to keep up with you? People, just want to keep tabs.
My name, TJ Stoops. No spaces, no underscores. I'm old school. Like I said, I don't do none of that. I don't feel like doing none of that. Just search my name. No lie, you'll find me on from Insta, X, TikTok, Facebook, Blue Sky, Threads. Name the place, I'm probably there. And probably disagreeing with a lot of people about basketball these days.
Hey, I mean, that's part of it though, right? Like, if we all just fall in line to what one person says, like, what's the point, you know? So
Facts.
yeah, so like anybody watching, man, like go follow TJ. He's a great dude. It has been such a pleasure to get to know you, and again, I really appreciate you coming on. Like, it means a lot, like real stuff. But my final question is, I assume, right? And just correct me if I'm wrong, right? Basketball is way more than a game. Do you agree with
Absolutely.
that statement?
Absolutely. Without basketball, I literally wouldn't have my family. I literally wouldn't be alive. I would be one of those guys in a coffin without basketball right
And so, with that in mind, knowing that, and generally, right, but you might have some athletes, some players who have dreams of getting to that next level. With that in the back of your mind, understanding that basketball is more than a game, how can you teach that while still supporting their dream?
One of the biggest lessons I've learned with playing basketball is that comparison is a thief of joy. And so when you compare yourself to other players, when you see other players doing other things or being more successful or being, like who they are in their realm, it's not your role. Be you. Don't be nobody else but you. Because if you try to do that cookie cutter, like what a lot of people do now, that cookie cutter like player, oh, I do this like this player, I do this like this player. Like you become lost in your own potential. And so many players now, they think that, like you said earlier, just scoring is, the end all be all. So like forget like basketball, are you a good teammate? Are you coachable? Do you listen? Do you hold other people accountable like you hold yourself accountable? Do you talk to people, not yell? Do you talk like, hey, I was there, but next time I'll like look for me. People, the kids are so emotional with this game while playing it, they don't understand what they lose in a teammate, in a coach, and just temper you. Be you, but just understand that other people are other people. No matter what team they're on, are opposite of yours, they are people. Just play ball.
Good stuff, man. Well, CJ, again, man, much appreciation. Blessings to you and your family. And you got a home here. It's more than a game, Elite Fit Connect. Hit me up whenever. You got my number, you got everything.
Yes, sir.
For all y'all watching, please, please, please take everything that you got from here. TJ spit some real game. He's been through it, on the entertainment side. On the road to the NBA, he's played overseas. He has experience, being a reality TV actor. But all that, the biggest takeaway for me, right, is when you said you were not meant to win Squid Games. Because in my eyes, right, like I'm a true believer that everything happens for a reason. God puts people in your life for a reason, and that might not be for a long time, right? You have to accept where you are in life. Reflect, learn from it, and then grow, and then just be a better person and influence, right? I think the best thing that we can do as leaders within the game is to just influence, right? Positively influence the younger generation of hoopers, because they are sitting where we once were, right? And why not, make a lasting impact on these kids? So And with that, right, this is episode 7 of It's More Than a Game. We'll see y'all next time. So, peace.
Peace.